Oh, hello, hello.
Hello.
And welcome to the New York Mystery Machine.
Tammany Hall, but for ghosts, and Tammany, who is screaming in the background.
Oh, I can't hear her, but I assume she's screaming in the background. Well, this will be fun for me to edit. This will be a fun journey for me to edit.
Womp womp.
I may not even hear that womp womp. I probably cut it out by now. Christina's probably said a bunch of things that I've cut out. I say this because I was editing a patron exclusive episode, and if you see the amount of Christina I had to cut from it, because it just like Tammany wailing in the background. At one point, I like text Christina and I was like, hey, can your kid shut the fuck up? And I was like, am I allowed to tell your kid to shut the fuck up? And she said, yes. I'm like, great. Can she? Because Jesus, tap dancing Christ. She's becoming a nuisance on my life.
When that
kid grows up and she has the ability to communicate with me, you know, that's my favorite time, but like for people to have kids, when I can talk to them like an adult. I've waited like 10 years for my niece to like get to this point where I can just be like, hey, Julia, stop being the way you are. You're being weird. Like, that's my brand of, you know, being able to communicate with young people. I'm going to be like, Tammany Hall Marinelli, the chaos you caused me for years, I shan't forget.
Shan't. That's a word that came back.
I shan't forget it. So, anywho, exciting stuff here on the pod. We're rocking our wonderful, amazing road trip month. Some fun feedback we've gotten from you guys. We're enjoying the road trip. We've learned one thing from the road trip. If you noticed, the episodes now seem to be getting longer and longer because there's so much information when you leave New York. But it's been a nice little respite to leave New York. And that's the best part about living in New York, right? Because you leave it and then you're like, oh, I miss New York. So in a couple of weeks, we're back to all of our New York stories. When we get back from our road trip, we have a lot of cool stuff in the horizon. We have an interview coming up. We have a collab with Sean and Carrie. Of course, we have our season 3 finale, which is going to talk about your stories. We have the Hot Take Hotline open for business. I think people are going to be calling into that soon. I've gotten some messages of people telling me they're going to call in soon. So those will be available on our finale episode. And if you want to dial the Hot Take Hotline, yet all you got to do is head to, let's see if I memorize it, 917-462-4262. That's it. I memorized it. It's now ingrained in me. 917-462-4262. Leave your hot take. Listen to the voice message. It's really a sultry one that we left. So
we worked very hard on it.
It's worth even just calling in and hearing the voice message and leaving us your hot take or whatever. Leave us whatever you want. We don't even care. Just call it. If you want to say hi to us, just say hi. We love to hear it.
That'd be fun.
And while you're doing it, you head on over to nymysterymachine.com. If you head over there, you can tell us one of your crazy, wonky stories that we'll read on air. You can buy our merchandise. We have t-shirts. We have all these fun things. More merch is coming in the upcoming months, so be sure to head on over to our merch page at nymysterymachine.com. And don't forget, we haven't said this in a while. You got to follow us on all the Instagrams and all the socials, the Instagrams, the Facebooks, the TikToks. You do that on what?
You haven't said it?
I don't think I've said it. Maybe I have.
I
don't know.
I think it's on autopilot, but go on.
I barely know what I say. But you head on over to Instagram at NY Mystery Machine. That's on Instagram, on Facebook, and on TikTok. And you head out to NY Mysteries on X. And be sure to follow us. And then, you know, head over to our podcast pages on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave us some stars. Leave us some words. We love to read them. I've been sending out things that I've missed. I owed people stuff, and I sent stuff out yesterday. I found out that there's a shipping packing place around the corner from me, which is revolutionary. I didn't need to go to the post office to send the t-shirts that I owed people. So that was nice.
That's excellent.
If I still owe you stickers, please email me, and I will send those out as well. I'm on a roll now. I got some stamps. We're good to go. We're living the dream. Yeah. I think
that's probably all the housekeeping.
I think, you know, sometimes it's important to get all that housekeeping.
It is.
Just, you know, just there and available and out of the way. Not out of the way. It's important stuff. Oh, my word. I got some loud stuff on my end.
Oh, I can't hear that.
Well, yeah, the Zoom really does a good job at, like, preventing us from hearing ambient sounds, which is why I didn't know your daughter was wailing her fucking face off for an entire Patreon-exclusive episode. Or also been like, hey, tell your kid to shut up.
I don't remember that.
She was.
I don't remember that. I really
I'll send you the raw audio back and you can listen to it.
I believe you.
It's a good 5 minutes of a 25-minute episode. Like a solid straight five.
Get ready for this one.
Oh, God. This is the main episode. It's even harder to do. Oh, my God. You got to get a mute button. Don't you have a mute button?
Yeah, we're recording in two places. I can inevitably forget to press mute somewhere, and I can't find it on
GarageBand. All right, fuck it.
Well, that'll be
No, just make my life harder. Just continue to make my life harder. That's what I want you to do. Make it harder.
I can do that.
That's all I want. Because I'm the one who has to edit the next two episodes in the next 2 days because I'm going away next week. I won't be able to drop it.
That sounds like a you problem.
Yeah, somehow it sounds like a me problem because it's the thing that I do for the podcast. Anywho.
I was going to say, I usually ask, what are we doing?
Yeah.
But my instinct, given that we're on a road trip, where are we today, Adam?
Well, Christina, it's worth noting.
It's worth noting. I have to do that a little bit. It's worth noting.
That's better. Yeah, it's a better. If you can't scream, it just.
I might as well intonate it.
Intonate
it's worth noting.
I planned this episode that I'm doing today before I discovered the Buck episode a few weeks back. Okay. So that being said, I'm taking us back to Missouri.
Oh, okay. All right.
So sorry, y'all. But we're back to Missouri. In the Midwest, but I have this episode honestly planned months ago when I even thought of like doing the road trip series. I was like, I want to do this. I want to cover this. And while we were in Mountain View a couple weeks ago, which is in southern Missouri, today we're heading to northern Missouri. And the site and a site that brings us back to an old friend from season one.
Oh,
today we head to Hannibal, Missouri, and we take a stop at the Mark Twain Cave.
Oh, all right.
Now, you may recall.
A Mark Twain cat ghost.
That was all part of it. Yeah, that was part of it. You may recall back in season one, Mark Twain spent some time here in New York City. In episode 10, this is like episode 130.
Wow.
In episode 10, The House of Death. We visited one of Mark Twain's final houses where he lived. And according to many accounts, his specter still hangs out and chats with people who give him even a sliver of attention. He says, my name is Samuel and I got a story to tell. Like that's been heard.
Do you think he does? He introduces himself as Samuel, not by his more prolific.
No. Yeah. I'm not sure if you recall. Because I recall 130 episodes in my brain.
You do, but especially ones that are about Easter. Go on.
That's the quote that someone says. It's my name is Samuel and I've got a story to tell.
now it rings a bell.
We laughed about it at the time.
I can feel it.
So this is one of Mark Twain's final homes, but today we're heading all the way back to his hometown.
Oh,
and so I'm excited to cover this story because I have been to Hannibal on a few occasions, and I've been to the Mark Twain Caves. Our dearest friend Sam is from Southern Illinois,
right?
And
which
where
borders
she,
Missouri?
Yep, where she is, she's about 25 to 30 miles north of Hannibal. And so when Sam moved back to Illinois, I had the incredible experience of going to the cave with her. Just about a year ago, we went to the cave, actually. It was really just a crazy dope experience. It's one of my favorite mugs that I have in my collection. It's from the Mark Twain Cave. And let me tell you, it's a creepy experience. It's a big old cave.
I was going to say, I'm dying to know why Mark Twain is associated with a cave.
Oh, sure. I mean, you're going to find out in just
I look forward in
just a little bit. Well, that's because the experience isn't just creepy because you're in a cave.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately for us, when we took our Mark Twain cave tour, our tour guide actually looked like Mark Twain. It was really weird. I was like, is this like a reenactment? Are we in the middle of a reenactment?
What if it was him?
Yeah, it wasn't him. The cave is creepy because of the multifaceted history of the cave, which is a bit tied directly to Mark Twain, but also a lot of it's tied to mystery and some even horror. This cave has seen thousands and thousands of feet along its stony floors. I mean, so many people over the course of the last 100 years have been in and out of this cave. In fact, famous outlaw Jesse James hid in the cave for a period while he was on the run.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
In 2019, folks in Missouri even found his name carved onto one of the walls. And there's a whole spot where they're like, oh, this is where he was. This like little nook is where he hid for a few days while he was on the run.
That's amazing. That's like Kilroy was here. That's amazing.
Yeah. If you ever visit the cave, there's hundreds and hundreds of names on the walls throughout the caves. Some are carved. Some are written in like lantern soot and like torch soot. Samuel Clemens himself has his name there as well. They found his name as well. And there are burn marks from torches and lanterns all over the place. There's bats. And above all, there's a sense of mystery, a sense of wonder, and yes, even a sense of terror. Now, this is a story of mystery. It's a story of mad doctors. It's a story of ghosts. And it's a story of missing children.
Oh.
So it's a doozy. This whole... You start researching the cave for one thing, and then you find out so many other things. Much like a cave, right? Like, you go in for one thing, and then you realize, oh my gosh, the thing is, like, eternal and keeps going and going and going. And that's kind of what happened.
Here.
Yeah, and that's kind of what happens when you're researching Mark Twain Cave. So let's go from the beginning. Let's chat about it. So the earliest documentation of the caves being discovered was in 1819. A local hunter had chased his dog into a small hillside opening. The dog ran away from him and found this like opening in the side of the cave. And so he and his brothers decided to investigate, and they realized that this opening led to a massive underground honeycomb of caves.
Oh, wow.
Now, in the mid-19th century, Hannibal residents would explore the caves because of its location to the river bluffs. It also became a popular site for picnics and outings. And I'm going to share a bunch of cave photos this week.
Is it just pretty? Because you say it becomes a site for picnics and outings. And I don't even really associate caves as like, yeah, so what a scenic picnic spot.
Well, there's something about the cave that is kind of magical. I mean, the rocks, it's gorgeous. And there's like water, there's fresh water that runs through it. There's like some really cool things that are in the cave. I'm not sure how... It was in the 1800s doing stuff. There was no electricity at the time. Everything was candlelight. We're going to get into that in a little bit as well. But in any case, it was a popular site for people to visit once people knew it existed. And sorry to try to uncover a bit. Now, if you're familiar with The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, written by Mark Twain, his first best-selling book, the character of Tom goes on a picnic to the cave with his best girl, Becky, and their classmates. Now, Tom and Becky become lost and wander in the cave for days, facing starvation and dehydration. Becky becomes dehydrated and weak, and Tom's search for a way out becomes more desperate. He encounters Injun Joe, who had earlier committed a murder and a grave robbery, but Injun Joe doesn't see Tom. Tom eventually finds an exit, and then him and Becky are joyfully welcomed back to the town. And learning that they had been missing for 3 days and traveled 5 miles from the original entrance where they entered the cave.
I'm 95% sure that Wishbone covered this, and that's what I'm seeing in my mind.
There's no doubt that Wishbone covered this. That was like his whole thing. He was like, here's literature, I'm a dog, I'm going to cover it, but like make it more accessible.
Great job.
And that's a lot of the, and again, a lot of the truth of these caves are true because... Samuel Clemens himself spent a lot of time in the caves. He went on record saying that the one thing he never was exhausted about was discovering more in these caves. And so he implemented the cave use in his books because it was so important to him. Now, the idea that these two were missing for 3 days and traveled 5 miles from the entrance isn't super like made up. Many people would go into these caves and kind of miss out on days because they were so vast. You make a wrong turn and you're just on a new system. So in the book, Judge Thatcher has the cave's entrance door reinforced and locked so no one goes in it again. When Tom hears of this action 2 weeks later, he's horror-stricken, knowing that Injun Joe is still inside. So he directs a posse to the cave to reopen it, and they find Injun Joe dead of starvation just inside the entrance.
Quick question, more for me than for the listener. Injun Joe, is that what you're saying?
Injun Joe, who's half Native American, half white.
I see, okay. So
it's I-N-G-J-U-N.
Okay.
Yeah, there is, you know, the casualest amount of racism in a lot of these books at the time. Certainly, there's a lot of laced racism within The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. Talks about racism a lot in that as well. And Tom Sawyer, you know, has this villainous character who is, you know, in the book, part Native American. Now, if you go on the tour like I did, you learn that Injun Joe was in fact a real person, but his tale is completely fictitious. He probably didn't murder anyone. He probably didn't steal from any graves. And he definitely lived until he was 102 years old. So he didn't die in the cave.
Wow.
Yeah. However, the journey that Tom and Becky took in those pitch black caves was an experience had by so many, especially young kids. Kids would run into the caves with their candles, but soon get lost for days when they would take a wrong turn or forget the path. So often those candles would just extinguish and they didn't have an extra match. And now there was just them alone in the dark. And this is a time before modern electricity. These caves are pitch black. There's not an ounce of light. The coolest thing that happened when we were in the caves was we would go into the cave and we got to this one section of the cave and our tour guide, it was really dope. We had our tour was just Sam, myself, and these like a mom and a daughter. And so it was very intimate. It was like a super intimate tour, which was really great. We were just with the tour guide. We can ask any questions we want. Everything was great. And there's one moment where he turns the lights off in the cave. Mm. He's like, don't move. And he's like, this is what you would have seen in the 1800s. And he turns the lights off and it's pitch black.
I was going to say, and you saw nothing because it was too dark.
Nothing, like complete nothingness. You couldn't even see the hand in front of your face. Like nothingness. It's insanity. So the history of missing kids in these caves is something that we're actually going to get into a bit during this episode, and in a really deep way on the back end of this episode as we move from the 1800s to the 1900s. Mm-hmm. But for now, we're going to stay in the 1800s, and we're going to talk about some weird mad science that went down in these caves.
I can't imagine.
I don't think we've done any mad science on this show yet.
We've done body stealing for medical purposes, but I don't think we've done
mad
science. Well,
we're getting to some of that.
Okay.
So in 1848, Dr. Joseph Nash McDowell purchases the cave, right? McDowell was born in Lexington, Kentucky in 1805. He apparently did have some family in Hannibal, which is partly the reason that he was, you know, found his way back. He's the son of a Revolutionary War vet who, from many accounts, might have been part of Washington's crew who crossed the Delaware, which is pretty dope.
That's cool.
He receives a medical degree from Transylvania University in 1825, which no one really remarks as creepy because the Dracula, you know, legend and lore of Transylvania didn't exist yet.
Okay.
So no one's like, uh-oh, he went to Transylvania University. It's not that scary because no one really, we're in the 1800s, early 1800s, and the tale of Transylvania being the home of Dracula doesn't exist yet.
Huh. Okay.
Prior to moving to St. Louis in 1839, he has the intention of founding his own medical school. McDowell served as an anatomy professor at Jefferson Medical College in Philadelphia and the Medical Department of Cincinnati in Ohio. So he's well-traveled. He arrives in St. Louis with quite a reputation, right? He's a brilliant anatomist. He's an enthusiastic teacher. He's an entertaining public speaker. People are drawn to him. According to his students, though, he was very boisterous, opinionated, and feisty. He was also notorious for having a persistent, fiery temper. He was the kind of person who made enemies easily and who would regularly ridicule his adversaries in open letters in which he published in newspapers. Very Hamilton-esque. Yeah. He's like, I am going to call you out publicly.
Like
this very private matter that we're dealing with, I'm going to publicly embarrass you
about. I want everyone else to know exactly what you've done.
The brilliant surgeon, however, had a very particular need when he got to Hannibal. He was in need of a cold space for science.
Hmm.
Now, what was that science? Why? It was the experimentation of dead bodies.
Okay. All right. There's our tie-in.
So, one of the doctor's main focuses was trying to petrify dead bodies. Now, traditionally, that is when petrification is when the organic matter is completely replaced by minerals and fossil and is turned to stone. Generally, it occurs by filling the pores of the tissue and the intracellular spaces with minerals, then dissolving the organic matter and replacing it with more minerals. The most famous case of petrification was not done on purpose, but rather was a result of the eruption of Mount Vesuvius on Pompeii.
Huh. Look at that. Okay.
That's petrification. All the people who are in those stones are petrified.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't... Sorry, my chair just crashed. Wouldn't have thought of that. That makes sense, though. Okay.
Which is where the phrase petrified comes from, because it scares you so much that you're not able to move.
And your organic tissue is replaced by minerals.
Yeah, usually.
Every time.
So occupations such as resurrectionists, who are instructed to go into cemeteries and exhume corpses and transport them to various schools, institutions for dissection, and grave robbers, would aid in the new discoveries of medicine during this time. Mm. Medicine that McDowell was very interested in accomplishing. Now at this time, it's pretty frowned upon to use cadavers to study on, right?
Even which if is they why are McDowell. Given?
Yeah, which is why McDowell would get them from graves to do his studying in secret. This is also another time where we're seeing another rise in body snatching for science. We saw the first kind of set of this in New York that happened during the time of in the early 1800s with, if you recall, the doctor's riots.
That's it.
Where people were snatching bodies for science. And then people got so angry that they headed up to the Columbia School, all like angry about it. And Alexander Hamilton was on the steps being like, hey, no, don't do this. And they were like, no, fuck you, Alexander Hamilton. You're the worst. I hope you die one day by gunshot. But and then what happened?
Some really
he died by gunshot.
Taunting that happened.
They were so specific to him. They were like, we hope that one day you throw your arm into the air during a duel and you're stupid enough to let someone shoot you. Maybe he was your friend. Who knows?
Who knows?
But you deserve it if it was your friend. And hopefully it was someone who you slayed and screwed out of political opportunities many a times. They were very specific about
really
their insults.
Weird.
It was so weird. So it's frowned upon to do this. So that's why he's hiring people in secrecy to get these bodies. And he's adamant that studying cadavers would move medicine forward so much that he required his students to perform at least one human dissection before they could even graduate.
I mean, fair.
So,
I mean, we look at that as fair now, but.
Yeah. The town around him did not support what he was rumored to be doing with his students and the dead bodies. And that earned him the nickname Mad Dr. McDowell.
Mm.
But soon enough, the doctor's desire for science perhaps became a desire to be more than a scientist, maybe even a god.
Ooh.
So now, Christina, your Sylvia Pepe graph should be going crazy today. You've already talked about Mark Twain, who's connected to a case. And now we talked just about the doctor's riots, mm-hmm. which is connected to this case. And now we're going to talk about another episode that we're bringing into this one. And that's because McDowell was a huge fan of the Fox sisters. If you remember from season 2, episode 54, the Fox sisters, quote unquote, discover spiritualism. They were these three sisters claiming to communicate with the dead, but they're really bullshitting about it. If you recall, Christina and I tried snapping our toes the entire episode. And I've gotten quite good at it since.
Can we have a demonstration?
You can't hear it. It's not that loud,
that
but I'm doing it.
That didn't stop us. That didn't stop
but I'm
us
doing,
for 10
I'm,
minutes on the episode.
I am currently doing it with my toes. I've gotten real
Move
good
that
at
mic.
It.
Move that mic closer.
Well, he sees them when they come to St. Louis, and he's enamored by them. Again, remember, they're bullshitting you.
Right.
But he doesn't know this, and it only feeds his love for spiritualism. And this is like a dangerous-like combination. You have this... you know, desire, rampant desire for science and this love and adoration for spiritualism. And when the two of them come together, it's a little combustible.
Yeah.
McDowell has these strong beliefs in spiritualism and starts to even believe that communication between living and the dead is possible. He even claims that he had seen and communicated with his dead mother on a few occasions.
So was this channeled by the Fox sisters, or is this just part of his general interest?
Separate.
Okay.
This is separate. Now, McDonald has a young daughter named Amanda who passes away from pneumonia when she's 14 years old.
Oh.
Now, it's worth noting.
It's worth noting.
The cave is 52 degrees Fahrenheit year-round. Okay. Nice and chilly.
Yeah.
So, McDowell uses this to his advantage. He takes a copper cylinder lined with glass. He fills it with an alcohol mixture and puts his dead daughter inside of it. He then hangs the whole casing from the ceiling in the cave.
Is he preserving her in an alcohol mixture? Is that what's happening here? And
yes.
And he's hanging
so,
the ceiling of a cave like a bat?
Basically, there's a slew of theories that of why he does this. Now, some believe he just wants to experiment with preservation. You know, could the cold combined with the alcohol solution preserve a human body? If so, for how long? What are the, you know, pieces of it? How much alcohol do you need? How cold do you need it to be? What is the particulars you need to preserve a human body? Another idea is that while he's doing this, he was also trying to inject her with an alcohol solution as well, which would make him a pioneer in embalming. This is early science. It's really important to remember embalming wasn't a thing until the Civil War. Embalming becomes popular mostly because there are so many bodies that needed to be preserved, or you just have a bunch of dead rotting bodies on every field, you know, across these battlefields. And so that's why doctors started embalming, so that at least the stenches wouldn't be as great, and it would preserve these bodies from decaying quickly.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, but prior to this, in the early 1800s, it's very new. This is not a thing that's happening so far yet. Any sort of body preservation was being done with waxes and coatings on the body, but nothing that we know as embalming now. Mm-hmm. The idea of draining blood and pumping it with formaldehyde to preserve the inside. So, however, there's one other idea that people believe.
I think it's the one that's in my brain.
So in addition to seeing how long a body could be preserved, in addition to seeing they can preserve a body through other substances, perhaps he was trying to find a way to reanimate her.
Yep, that's what I think. I think we've got a little Frankenstein on the side.
Well, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein had been published in 1818, so in his time,
yep.
And it was not so far, you know, of a stretch to believe that he may have read it and may have been inspired by it.
Yeah.
Now, it's worth noting.
Good God, Adam, it is worth noting.
It feels like a lot of things are worth noting today. McDowell didn't live in the cave or even go to the cave daily. Most days and nights, the cave is empty except for the hanging body of Amanda floating in a tube in the air. Amanda's body would soon become a magnet for the children of Hannibal. Older children would lead younger kids on adventures in the cave, which is about 3 miles outside of the city limits during Mark Twain's time. This is happening while Mark Twain is presumably a kid. Mm. Armed with torches, they would crawl inside and tell ghost stories around the cylinder containing her dead body.
Weird fucking kids.
Yeah, they would just hang out and like Amanda's body's hanging and they're just like by torches telling ghost stories like while this dead body is like floating and above them.
I know kids like creepy things. I know kids do weird things. This seems aggressively weird.
It's aggressively
weird, right? This is much. This is a bit much.
Yeah. I wish I could tell you it didn't get worse, but it gets worse.
Okay.
Because McDowell didn't assume anyone would go near the body. Why would anyone be tampering with things?
Great question.
So at times, when the younger kids are already pretty terrified as it was, the older ones would approach the tube and unscrew it. According to Twain in Life on the Mississippi, he says, quote, "The top of the cylinder was removable, and it was said to be a common thing for the baser order of tourists to drag the dead face into view and examine it and comment upon it." End quote.
Are you also, do we think that he's being delicate here and is actually talking about himself? Was he one of these kids that he unscrewed?
He claims that he never did any of this, but I don't know. But like, imagine these kids going, climbing on top of this hanging thing, opening the tube, and then taking this girl's head and pushing it to the front so people can see her dead face. What are you doing? It's no wonder that you can only imagine. It seems that Amanda's spirit could not rest.
Well, yeah.
And we're going to talk about that in just a few seconds.
Zero surprises.
But after 2 years, 2 years, this is, by the way, 2 full years, this body's hanging. After 2 years of complaints from the residents of Hannibal and constant pressure from them to, you know, remove his daughter, McDowell does indeed finally take his daughter's body to his family mausoleum in St. Louis. It's interesting, not only did McDowell use the caves as a hidden place for his experiments, it's also rumored he kept a stash of, a secret stash of Confederate weapons down there during the Civil War. He was an ardent supporter of the South, and he stockpiled guns and bullets for the rebels. He was also drafted as a medic for the South during the Civil War. Pretty shitty dude because of that.
I was going to say, what an all-around...
All-around asshole.
Yeah. Truly.
What an all-around asshole. McDowell owned the cave for 20 years until his death. McDowell's cave became McDougal's cave in The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, if you're familiar with the story. In 1923, the cave is purchased by Judge E.T. Cameron, and in 1939, electric lights are added into the cave as the Cameron family begins to turn into a functioning tourist spot. In fact, it's Cameron who's most likely the person to coin the naming of it, Mark Twain Cave. Now to this day, the cave is still owned by descendants of the Cameron family, but there's been many more additions: campground, gift shop, candle shop, visitor center.
I could just think of all these macabre, like, souvenirs that you could sell if you're like a really terrible person that owns this cave. Little ornaments of the hanging body.
Oh my god, no, that's not I went to the gift shop. They don't sell that.
They don't sell that? Okay.
No. I mean, I would have purchased it if they did. Just for the story.
Oh my
god, can you imagine you on my Christmas tree? It's Amanda's dead body. People be like, what the fuck? I'm like, well, I do a podcast, you see. Should we sell Amanda's dead body? No, we shouldn't. That's very unethical. Folks claim that Amanda still haunts the caves and the main street of the town. Many people report witnessing a full specter of a young woman wearing old-fashioned dress with a cape. She usually has this long hair, and she's very pretty, they say. Her appearance was so red that a lot of people who witnessed her at first thought that she was a real live girl, and they would try to talk to her only to see her vanish. A former tour guide named Tom Rickey saw something in the late 1990s that still haunts him. Rickey says, quote, "I got a cold chill. I got them now thinking about it. I got a chill over me. And I turned around and there she was." She was a girl wearing a long, old-fashioned dress with a cape. I happened to look back in McDowell's room, and I saw her standing there as plain as day. She had long, dark hair, very, very pretty. She was only there for an instant.
So you said McDowell's room. So is this, like, can you take tours of McDowell's house, basically?
Oh, no. So McDowell's room is the section of the cave that this tape, that's, so we, oh, I got to see oh, it. Oh, so, like, okay. You go there. And the tour guy's like, this is the place where he hung his. And you see in the walls where the marks from where the chains and the bolts were that held it in
that's
suspense.
That's so weird. That's so weird.
Yeah, it was really dope. You like just see like these markings of where it was bolted into the wall. And where like he had like shit like stored in his like, that was probably Confederate ammunition.
Gosh, wow, okay.
Tom continues, he was thinking that the girl was perhaps a lost tourist, and he tried to speak with her, but she turned and went into the cave and just walked off. She didn't fade, but there was nowhere to walk. Mm-hmm. She just walked until there was nowhere to walk, and she was gone. She went through the wall. She just walked off, and she wasn't there anymore, he said.
I hate it.
In recent history, there has been stories of people seeing a little girl in there. There are even a few tour guides who said they feel something and guides who opt to not go in by themselves. Not a very good tour guide, if you ask me. Don't be a tour guide then. If it's haunted, you know it's haunted, you probably shouldn't be a tour guide.
Yeah. This is why I will never be a tour guide or sleep over at a haunted place or now a haunted cave.
I mean, you may. You may. When we, at one point, when we were like, how much money would you guys give us if I get Christina to stay in a haunted hotel overnight? we may be able to get a whole new like setup. You know,
that's going to be such a disappointing recording. Like, if we, I assume we would do like body cam.
Yeah, you'll be weeping the entire time.
Yeah, I'd be weeping and praying in a corner.
It's just Christina's just weeping and praying myself. In a corner, just covering herself with holy water. There are haunted tours provided in the caves, in addition to normal ones. A tourist submitted the following to Haunted Hannibal, who hosts the haunted tours. This person says, quote, "Me and my friend were on your tour on the 15th of October, the 9 p.m. one. My friend had never been to Hannibal before and wanted to go to the Mark Twain Cave. As we bought our tickets, we joked about seeing a ghost. On the tour, the guy pointed out which room the girl had been in, McDowell's chamber, where he placed the copper cylinder. As the tour moved on, something caught my eye and I had to look. What I saw was a young girl with dark hair. She didn't look at me, she was looking down. Then I saw what looked like someone offering her hand to take. Just thought I would share that with you. Signed, V. Powell." Chrissy, I don't like that.
I don't like it.
Not at all. Well, Christina, we're going to take a break.
Okay.
And when we get back, we're going to shift our attention from the 1800s to the 1900s to a different type of story that happened within the confines of these caves. We're going to hear a sad story of three kids who entered the cave but never made it out. We'll be right back after this break. Let's talk about Audible.
Yes. Audible is the leading provider of spoken word entertainment and audiobooks, ranging from bestsellers to memoirs, news, business, and more. And now you can start your own free trial by heading to audibletrial.com/NY Mystery Machine.
Your free 30-day trial comes with one credit, 2 credit for Amazon Prime members, good for any premium selection titles you like, yours to keep. The Audible Plus catalog consists of podcasts, audiobooks, guided wellness, and Audible originals. Listen all you want, no credits needed.
Audible allows you to download titles and listen offline, anytime, anywhere. Perfect for long trips or even cozy afternoons to yourself.
The app is free and can be installed on smartphones and tablets, and you can listen across devices without losing your spot.
I just recently checked out The Mad Sculptor by Harold Schechter, which we based a whole episode on.
You're darn right we did. And I'm sure they have even more true crime and paranormal books in the collection as well.
Again, Audible isn't just audiobooks. They have podcasts, guided wellness programs, theatrical performances, A-list comedy, and exclusive Audible originals you won't find anywhere else.
Wait, podcasts? Does that include the New York Mystery Machine?
Sure does. To start your free 30-day trial, head to audibletrial.com/NY Mystery Machine.
That's audibletrial.com/NY Mystery Machine. The New York Mystery Machine is brought to you in part by listeners like you.
That's right. Head on over to our Patreon, and for as little as $3 a month, you can help keep the pod growing.
By joining, you can access a whole bunch of cool stuff, such as mini episodes, swag, exclusive playlists, and more.
Head to www.patreon.com/NY Mystery Machine to find out more and become a patron.
That's www.patreon.com/NY Mystery Machine and join our ever-growing community today. Okay, we are back. And so the story is now going to jump from the 1800s to the 1900s. And it's important to note that these caves are pretty massive. They connect to other cave systems. Mm-hmm. And they're really, you know, extending. And so part of the system of the Mark Twain Cave moves into a section called the Murphy's Cave. So a lot of the story takes place in the Murphy's Cave, but it is part of the whole system of the Mark Twain Cave. Like, you can't Google Maps Murphy Cave. It's all Mark Twain's cave. It's one section. But it's just important to kind of like clarify that, if in case you, the listener, go and want to do more research, you'll see the phrase Murphy's Cave a lot in this next story. So one late afternoon, May 1967, so 100 years later, three Missouri boys slipped through their backyards to do what they loved. They were exploring the caves in Hannibal.
Aw, spelunkers.
But after they entered the caves, they were never seen again. Their names were Billy Hoag, who's 10, Joey Hoag, who's 13, and Craig Dowell, who's 14. And their fate is one of Hannibal's greatest mysteries. Wow. On May 10th, 1967, Joey Hoag stepped off the school bus outside his parents' home in Hannibal's Southside neighborhood when he was greeted by his 16-year-old sister, Deborah Dee Dee Hoag. Billy was already in the house, which he shared with his 10 siblings.
Wow.
Joey walked to his bedroom and changed out of his school clothes. Their parents were shopping at a nearby meat market, and Dee Dee was given the orders. Dee Dee had told them to stay in the yard. However, Billy didn't answer. Now, the night before, the two brothers had ventured out to the caves, which was under construction at the time. When they came home, they were both covered in red clay mud, and their father told them, don't you ever go to those holes again. Mm. Because you're like, you were at the caves. You can go there. You can get lost and fucking die and shit. Mm-hmm. Now, that day, the 10th, you know, the day after, witnesses reported seeing the brothers with their buddy Craig walking in the direction of the cave. According to the Hannibal Courier Post and Dee Dee, they said that they had taken flashlights and a homemade ladder that were found missing from the family's home. When the boys' parents came home, they realized that they were missing. Over the course of the first 2 days, law enforcement coupled with spelunkers made their way through the cave, crawling through small spaces in the rock and the mud, looking for any sign of the boys. 2 days would turn into 10 days. Now, federal law enforcement and national media descended upon Hannibal at the time. Members of the National Speleological Society were flown in from Washington on Presidential Jet 2 to also try and aid in the search. They would map out the cave, and they didn't find anything. Now, these caves, again, are huge underground systems, many of which have either yet to be discovered or even properly mapped out. So, like, some have are like, oh, yeah, there's stuff down there, but we haven't mapped out properly. Don't go there. And some is just like, we haven't even gotten there yet. Mm. It's miles and miles and miles and miles and miles of cave that we don't even realize how deep into the earth they go. The construction company who was working on the caves at the time was immediately ordered by the mayor to keep the holes that they had been working on open. Mm-hmm. The workers had sealed them only a few days after the disappearance, according to Dee Dee and the family. So at this time, this section of caves is being worked on by construction, meaning trying to blow holes out, make it presentable, and make it, you know, to be able to be mapped out, connected to the caves, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. With no sign of the boys in the caves, questions about their whereabouts began to grow even darker. Trains leaving Hannibal after 4:40 p.m. on May 10th were all searched for the boys, according to the Courier Post. Speculation about possible kidnappings spread throughout the town as well. On May 12th, 2 days after they go missing, the newspaper reported the following, quote, Mayor Harry Musgrove requested that the National Guard begin a search this morning from the Universal Atlas Cement Plant at Alaska north along the river to a point beyond the cave area. The paper also reported many tips. Some included a lone sock that they thought to be Dowell's that was found in a quarry by members of the Mark Twain Emergency Squad and a red substance that believed to be his blood. Dee Dee said when they blasted those holes open, they didn't put any kind of caution tape around them. She said that she thinks the boys perhaps got buried in one of the holes and someone from the construction company who ran the equipment knew that they had buried them, which is a crazy allegation to make.
Yeah.
But she's pretty certain about it. She's like, I think that this was basically a cover-up, that something happened and instead of like owning up to something that you screwed up, because just anytime you're constructing anything, you have to have some sort of caution tape. This is on you. All the holes are filled, and days pass, weeks pass, and they never find the boys. Even to this day, there has been no evidence of the boys. No one knows where the boys are. And there's plenty of theories as to what perhaps happened to the boys. We're going to get into a few of them in just a little bit. Under Missouri state law, any missing persons case that is open is never closed until it is solved. Mm. It just stays open. So they never close a case. So these three boys are still missing. The case is still open.
Wow. Wow. I mean, my first thought is it possible that they just really wandered far? I mean, how far mapped is the cave today, I wonder?
It's far. Even if it was mapped, I tell you, as someone who was in the Mark Twain cave, there are spots of it you're not allowed to walk. Mm-hmm. You take this main path that the tour guide takes you on. And if you look to your right, there's like a whole tunnel and it just keeps going. It just keeps going. And like, if you walk down that tunnel where there's no light because they have no lights on that section, you're there. And if you take a wrong turn from that path, you're completely gone from the path, and you're just in the tunnels, and they're echoey, right? So like, sound is weird in a tunnel, in a cave rather. A sound coming from an area could have an echo from like a mile away, for all you know, right? Sound is crazy, and so it's really hard. So there's a lot of theories as to what could have happened to them. Frankie Cambaletta and Chris Cutter started a podcast in 2019 called The Lost Boys of Hannibal. Cambaletta also has begun working on a documentary film about the case. The two podcast hosts have a few theories on what may have happened to the boys. And the first theory, of course, is that they got lost in the caves, right? They simply took a wrong turn. They dove too far in, and that was the end of that. And they just never were found. That theory is a little hard. It is the 60s. A lot of people were looking at these tunnels, and there was no evidence that they passed through the main sections, even, right? Not to say that they didn't, but there was no evidence that said it, right? Okay. They found nothing to say, oh, the boys were here.
No clear footprints.
For all intents and purposes, they weren't there, or they were there. I mean, like, it's Schrodinger's cat, right? They could have been there. It could not have been there. They found no evidence to prove either. The second theory is that the boys perhaps fell victim to an opportunistic killer. Cambaletta says the following, quote, "It's not only horrific to think of how these boys ended, but also the idea that somebody would perhaps hunt these local kids that everybody loved. It's a possibility that serial killer John Wayne Gacy was traveling through and from Hannibal."
Oh, interesting.
I guess
that timeline lines up.
Yeah, I don't know a ton about John Wayne Gacy. I did not watch the documentary. I think I'm one of the few people who didn't watch the documentary.
It's on my list. Same team.
It's on my list of documentaries to watch. But you know, Gacy is a sex offender who murdered a lot of young people. So I have a really hard time watching that stuff.
Same.
But you know, he is all throughout Illinois. There's a chance that Gacy finds his way there as well. There is a possibility before, either before or after he's in Waterloo, that he takes an excursion there. I mean, we just don't know. It's a possibility. And then the third theory that they have explored, and the one that the Hoag boys' mother ascribes to as the truth, according to Cambaletta, is that some kind of cover-up was involved. And this is the theory that I mentioned before that Dee Dee believed, that the boys got buried in some of the holes, and someone from the construction company, knowing that they were buried, just lied about it. They're like, oops, they probably fell in a hole and now we're buried and they're dead. And it's probably easier to just not tell anyone because this would ruin everything. And we'd be murderers.
It's a big allegation, but does sound quite possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very big allegation. Also sounds very possible. Cambaletta and Cutters have been able to connect with members of the Hoag family and collaborate with entities such as the Rawls County Sheriff's Office and the Missouri Department of Transportation. And they believe it's, quote, leading right now toward more of a true crime opportunistic killer than it is a caving. The two things they believe in, the thing they don't believe in the most is that these kids got lost. What they believe is that these kids were little adventurers who were doing this a lot, like who were looking at caves kind of on the regular. And for them to get lost in a cave system seems almost kind of an odd thing. Even other kids, think mistakes happen, but they're like, these kids were doing this for a lot of the time. So it's weird that this one day they take a wrong turn, they go missing forever, and that we never hear from them ever again. it really does lean towards perhaps an opportunistic murder, or something happened to them and someone had to cover it up so they didn't get in trouble about it. The caves are things of wonder, but they're also things of mystery. Over the years, there's been countless stories of hauntings in the cave. Many have claimed to see Mark Twain's ghost as a full body apparition.
Does he come up and say, "I'm Samuel Clemens"?
No, yeah, because he's in New York. Mark Twain's ghost is in New York, guys. Don't take it away from us. Other people have seen ghosts of many of the lost children of the caves. You know, children over the course of the century who went into the caves and never left the cave. You could imagine a lot of kids becoming lost and injured or frightened, scared, even perhaps deceased in the early 1800s when there was absolutely no mapping of the caves just yet. There's no light in the caves, but they go with their candles and their candles blow out and then they're kind of just lost in there. And so many people who have taken these haunted tours have claimed to see many apparitions, heard many things. The one thing that I don't think is a thing to hold to is hearing noises in the cave. I was in the cave. I heard 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, from just drips of water down, you know, down the lane. So, but many people have said they heard things, they felt things, they've been touched by spirits. Others, you know, there's plenty of people who work the caves who have never seen a ghost to begin with. Our tour guy didn't really mention ghosts at all, but he was very, very creepy in his, in some of his like storytelling, because he knows that that's a little bit of a sensationalism that the people like. When I was there, I didn't see anything when I was there. I don't believe
Did
Sam
you feel
saw
anything.
Nah, I mean, I was so invested, you know. You're feeling like just the energy of the cave, man. Like, that sounds so... You're just feeling the energy of the cave, man. Hey, Larry.
Larry? Yeah.
You're feeling the energy of the cave and just, like, all the people who have been in there and the collective energy that's just, like, bouncing and bouncing and bouncing. And, like, it's just... It's fucking wild, man. No, but you do. You feel like the energy of the cave and, like, the massive history that's there. Like, this... piece of cave has been here for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, right? Mm-hmm. Like how caves are, he talked about how caves are made, you know, how the water and the sediment and everything creates these like honeycomb alcoves. And so you're kind of just so overwhelmed with how cool it is. I imagine if you went to a ghost tour of the cave, it'd be a different experience, because everyone knows when you're on ghost tour and stuff like that, like you're looking for experiences. Yeah. I wasn't looking for a haunted experience. I was just experiencing the cave. I assume most places are haunted. Like that's my default. You know, my default is it's probably haunted. But like that wasn't what I was going for. And so I remember just going to these caves and just seeing these signatures, seeing the Jesse James signature, seeing the Sam Clemens signature, Mark Twain, and hearing these stories and hearing the experience that Twain had in the cave that influenced Tom Sawyer. And certainly getting to that section, I will say the creepiest section for me was getting to the McDowell section, where it's like, this is where he hung this person's body. It was his daughter.
You can see like the bolts and things. That's wild.
Yeah, it wasn't like you can't see like the, but you see like the markings were in there. I'm pretty sure. Sam will listen to this, so she may remember. I'm pretty sure like there was like, you know, the like the big metal things, like the loops that at least hung like from the chains. I'm pretty sure, but there were remnants there. Like there were remnants there that the tour guide was like, this is, you can see on the wall, this is clearly where he hung the person. And it's a well documented thing. It's well documented.
Wild.
So it happened.
I hate it.
And that is the strange, wild stories in the Mark Twain Caves in Hannibal, Missouri.
That's incredible. Things I would never have known about. That's incredible.
That's what happens when you take a little tour at a little road trip out of New York.
A little side adventure.
So
that
I tell you,
very cool.
I tell you guys. I didn't mean to go to Missouri twice, but I did go to Southern and I went to Northern and Southern. So
technically, the last visit to Missouri was also a visit to Venus and Mars and the Moon. So you know,
fair. It was barely Missouri. Well, if you have any thoughts on any of this, we implore you to head on over to the Hot Take Hotline. You call the number.
Please.
It's 917-462.
Okay, let me do it. Let me see if I can do it. 917-462-4262.
There it is.
I did it.
Dial the number. Call us. Let us know your thoughts. We'd love to hear it. while you're just doing stuff for the New York Mystery Machine, we invite you to head on over to our Patreon. For as little as $3, you join the community. For as little as $5, you get a bonus episode. There's a episode up there currently all about the Wall Street bombing of 1920, if you're interested in learning a bit about that. There's another one coming up at the end of the month that is a part of our first episode of our road trip, which took place, we just mentioned, in Mountain View. So be sure to listen to that episode, because it's a little bit of an addendum to our first road trip episode. We'd love to have you listen to that. And supporting the pod in a deep way is just wonderful. It helps us. It keeps us going. It gives us great little things like a microphone for Christina to record on.
Who knows? Well, maybe one day we'll fund your ability to view me crying in a corner in a haunted location.
Oh, God, that's the dream. That's the dream, kids. Just, and we'll make like stickers and T-shirts about it. Like, we'll do the whole thing. Yeah, so a lot of fun stuff coming up. We're already making plans for season 4, which we're really excited about. And ideally, you know, that includes, we mentioned this for a while, ideally more opportunities to meet you all in real life or digitally. And so we're working on that as well. But we're so excited. We still have 2 more road trip episodes, right?
2 more, yep.
Yeah, 2 more road trip episodes. And then in May, we head back to New York. And then we're almost done with our season. Crazy times.
That's insane.
Well, I've been Adam Mace.
I've been Christina Marinelli.
And thank you ever so much for taking a ride on the New York Mystery Machine.
Tammy Hall, but for ghosts.